The Colbrin. 2. The Book of Gleanings. Being writings from various old Qaldi books, which were partially destroyed in ancient times. Chapter 8. The Hrmaintar journeys to the netherworld. Perhaps no man of his day properly honored Yaddal, for he was beyond their understanding, but Hrmaintar loved him and Ankiti never forgot him. Long days the thoughts of Hrmaintar rested upon Yaddal, his friend, the companion in the joyous hunting on the mountains. Long he thought, what manner of sleep is this, if sleep it be, that fell upon Yaddal? Has he decayed into dust to become nothing, as my eyes declare? Or does he live in some strange way? Did not the worm fasten onto his body before it was laid to rest, yet he knew it not? Long hours had Hrmaintar sat at the feet of Nintursa the Wise, yet faced with the blank stare and deaf ears of his companion he had begun to fear the certainty of death. Like many before him he sought to penetrate the veil. Therefore, having claimed audience, Hrmaintar came before the queen to state his intention. Dedi, having been victorious, was exalted in her own eyes and cared little that the battle had been won for her by Hrmaintar and others. Now the danger was past, she dallied with new favorites, not knowing the day of retribution would come, as come it surely did, for she was carried off captive in chains, to become the plaything of a cruel king. Having come before the queen, Hrmaintar spoke thus. O great queen, exalted above all others, great lady of battles, though dwelling here under your great shadow I am as a cat among pigeons, as a wild boar among a docile herd. Therefore, I would spread my wings, going to a distant place to communicate with my God. I would seek entry into the place of the dead. My heart is consumed with sorrow because of the uncertainty that grasps my heart, my spirit is restless. I shall seek to discover if my friend and companion yet lives in the land of shadows, or whether he is no more than mere dust, the plaything of the winds. Queen Dedi answered. Wherefore must you go to some distant place to communicate with your God? Is he some little god to be found only in one place? Hrmaintar replied. O great queen, no little god is this but the greatest god of all. It is not because of his littleness that I seek him out but because of his greatness. The handmaiden goes to the dressmaker but the dressmaker comes to the queen. Then Dedi inquired from Hrmaintar as to the nature of this god, for she was curious, he not having previously discussed such things with her. She asked him for which god he fought, but Hrmaintar said he had fought only for her. Hrmaintar said, we have a god you and you have a god and I have a god. The people have their gods and the strangers within your gates have their gods, but hidden behind all these is another god. These lesser gods are no more than his members. It is this god whom I seek. How can I, a mere mortal, describe him? Only this do I know, as I learned it in a remote temple. This god came into existence before all else. He ever was, so none could know him in the beginning and none knows his mysterious nature. No god came into existence before him. How can I even name one who had no mother after whom his name might have been made? He had no father who could have named him and said, this is I, your father. None can display his likeness in writing, nor can it be cut with knife in wood or stone. He is too great that men should even inquire about him. With what words could he be described to their understanding? No other god knows how to call him by name, even the greatest of them being less than a servant before him. Yet this I have been told, that the spirit of man can know this great god and can even know his nature, therefore perchance the spirit of man is greater than any of the gods. At this those who stood about Queen Dedi murmured against Hrmaintar, but she gave no heed to them, gazing long upon him. Then she spoke. Perchance, too, this great god does not exist. Who besides you knows of him? If he be so great, is it not more likely that he would be worshipped by gods rather than by men? Is it not more likely that lesser gods stand intermediate between him and men? If a shepherd or husbandman comes to the palace seeking justice or grace, does he see me or an official under me? You say your god is approachable by anyone, does this enhance his stature? Which is greater, the ruler who judges disputes between swineherds and listens to their complaints, or the ruler who appoints effective officials to deal with swineherds. Surely the former rules amid chaos while the latter rules with efficiency. Do not both of us believe, as all men believe, that there is one great God above all gods, but we believe that being so great this being is beyond approach by mere mortals. Only in this do we differ you and I. Hermaintar answered her, saying, I know him not as he is, all I know is that he exists. Look about you, you who are enthroned so mightily high that your eyes are bedazzled by your surroundings, so you cannot see the truth lesser beings discover for themselves. Why, even the lowly worm crawling beneath your palace proclaims that nothing less than an almighty God could have created it. Wise were our fathers in olden times, and wiser our father's fathers. Whence came their wisdom? Did it not come from the great God who holds the key to the meeting place of the two kingdoms which now stand apart? Who lifted the lofty vaults of heaven and spread earth out in wide expanse? Dedi said, does it matter whether it was this God or that? Your God or mine? Suffice it was some God named or unnamed. These are labyrinthic arguments unsuited to those to whom time is precious. Then those who stood about the queen set a snare for Hermaintar, asking him whether the great being of whom he spoke was the mother of all or the father of all. But Hermaintar answered, let he who has examined the great being answer, for I am but a mere mortal man, one not even claiming to be wise. Let the wise among you answer for me. Then Hermaintar departed from the presence of Queen Dedi. In a few days he left her land, driven by the God-given restlessness that marks the true seeker after light. With him went the youth Ankiti. Tame goats guided them to the border of the land and from thence they followed the way of the chariot until they came to the land of Meken where they rested. In this place dwelt Formana, the strong-limbed, who gave them shelter. Formana asked Hermaintar whither he went and Hermaintar replied. I go to seek the abode of Hamarit, which is set atop a mountain in the midst of this great forest, just beyond the river. There is a door therein which I would open, to which I hold a key. Formana said. This is an enterprise doomed for failure, for none may pass that way and return. I who have dwelt here for many long years know the truth of this, nor do I understand this talk of a key, this is a thing new to my ears. So Hermaintar drew forth the great key shaped like a sword but like no other sword, for it could not be gazed upon for more than a moment without blindness striking the beholder. Yet within its strange scabbard it harmed none. Formana said. This many-hued weapon is a strange thing indeed and I have no knowledge of its like or its power. But this I do know, it is an unequal struggle when men alone, however weaponed, have to face dread Achaemenid the Terrible One. This is not all, for first they must pass the fearsome watchman at the gate, and he never sleeps. Hermaintar said. I have set my heart on this enterprise because of my friend, also if there is an evil thing lurking within the forest it must be destroyed. I am one whose destiny is already written, I must die that men might live. What a man cannot escape he must face manfully. Then Hermaintar left Formana to go apart into a place of solitude where he prayed. O Father of the Gods, hear me. Hear me O Father of the Gods, for there is evil abroad in the land and men die of despair. Even the tallest of men cannot reach the heights of heaven, or the swiftest of them encompass the earth. Yet men must struggle against things beyond their reach and overcome evils which overshadow the whole land contained within the bitter waters. My destiny is decreed, I alone will enter the gate at the abode of Achaemenid. O Father of the Gods, when I return I will set up your name where now the name of other gods are written, little gods of no standing before you. I will raise a great straight monument to your sacred name, if I could but know it. Why did you move me, Father of the Gods, to embark on this enterprise unless I were destined to accomplish it? Why fill me with the restless desire to perform it? How can I, a mere mortal, succeed without aid? I sought no more than to know the lot of my friend, yet a greater burden has been allotted to me. If I die it may be without fear, but if I return may that return be glorified by the knowledge of truth. O Father of the Gods, stand by my side, Help me overcome the lurking thing and show it the strength of a son of Susuta. When Hermaintar returned he felt strengthened, but Formana tried to turn him away from his intention, saying, Desist from this thing, put this enterprise from your thoughts. You have courage and it carries you far, but does it not also sweep you along as one caught in the swift river current is swept to destruction? You cannot know what this means, the guardian at the gate alone is like nothing on earth, his weapons are like no others, for they are invisible and strike down from afar. Why strive to do this thing? It is no equal struggle. Hermaintar replied. My heart is set on this matter. Though I must journey along an unknown road, perhaps a road of no return, and fight a strange battle, go I will. I fear not the terror at the gate, nor that which dwells within the abode of Achaemen. Formana said. If go you must, then I who have seen many pass this way will go with you to the gate. Even through the forest I will accompany you, for am I not one who has been purified before the sacred flame? But is it wise that any other should go with such as we? Surely this youth, your attendant, this young man of few years, inexperienced in things such as we must face, should not accompany us. Is it not more fitting that he remain here to protect my daughters? Is it not better to exchange his inexperience for my experience, his youthful strength for my wisdom and cunning, his endurance for my steadfastness? Though Ankiti protested, it was agreed that he should remain behind at the dwelling place of Formana. So, making things ready, Hermaintar and Formana departed in the morning light, while Ankiti remained behind, a guardian of young women, and his heart was sore. He raised his voice to heaven, saying, O Father of the gods whom Hermaintar knows, why did you give him this restless heart? Why did you bestow it upon him? You have stirred his spirit so now he goes into unimaginable danger. O Father of the gods, of whom I am ignorant, overlook my shortcomings and hear my voice, from this day until he overcomes the evil thing and returns, let him ever rest in your thoughts. Stand by him when he faces the watchman at the gate. Strengthen his arm when he strikes at the things that lurk to devour. What these might be or their nature is beyond my imagination. I know them only from the talk of men, each of whom sees them from a different stance. Yet, have any truly seen and lived to return? I know not, but I pray sincerely for him whom I serve. When Hermaintar and Formana came to the edge of the forest they were attacked by lions, but they slew the beasts. Then they entered the forest and saw great trees such as they had not seen before. They went sleepless, for dread things lurked in the murky light of the forest. They pressed on, coming to the foot of the mountain where they camped and slept, for it was an open place. Then, as the sun rose next day they climbed the mountain until they came to a cleared place before the cave known as the Portal of the Dead. Here Hermaintar took leave of Formana who remained in a hut just beyond the cleared place. Now, Hermaintar looked about, seeking the guardian, for he knew what had to be done before he could enter the cave. Then he saw, to his right and beside the cave, a stone hut and seated before it was a very old woman. Going up to the woman he greeted her and said, I am one who would enter the dread place, the abode of death, the threshold of the other world, the door replacing the misty veil. I am one sanctified, one knowing the lesser mysteries, I am an enlightened one. The woman replied by asking the three questions which all who would span the spheres must answer, and when this was done correctly she invited Hermaintar into the hut. Inside she indicated a stool, and when he was seated she spread a cord around him in a circle. Then she placed a firepot before him, onto which she poured the contents of a small leather bag. She also gave him a pot of green water which he drank. Some time later, after he had slept a while, Hermaintar was conducted to the cave and left there at a spot known as the Devil's Mouth, for there an evil breath came from an opening in the ground. He remained there for a while and again he slept. Awaking he moved forward into a dark passage, but this movement was strange and he saw as through a narrow tunnel, while his body appeared light and airy. He came to the place where the watchman kept guard at the gate and beside him the terror squatted. Hermaintar drew his sword and faced the awful pair, he advanced cautiously towards them. Then, when they met, the air was filled with a loud clamour, great hissing noises beat at the ears, shouts and screams tore overhead. There was a howling such as no mortal has heard outside of that awful place. Hermaintar drew back a pace, then advanced again, and, behold, both the watchman and the terror suddenly vanished and the hideous clamour was stilled. Hermaintar passed through the portal and came to a wider, more open place wherein there was a pool of water. It was deep, dark, and still. He gazed into the water, and surely no mortal has ever seen such sights as he saw pictured in its stillness. He passed it by. Terrifying shadows leaped and quivered over the walls as he entered a narrowing passage, cast by some bitten ruddy light which seemed to dance as though alive. Then he saw daylight ahead. He came out into the daylight. On one hand the mountainside reared up, on the other was a vast chasm, between the two ran a narrow path, and up this he went. Great birds attacked him, eagles and birds with strange heads. He fought them off and continued upward until he came within sight of the abode of Achaemenid. He came to it after the long journey upward and stood before the great brazen doors, the seven bolted doors. Hermaintar saw no guardian before the doors, but he heard its voice as it asked the seven questions. He who had sat at the feet of Nintursu remembered well the replies to make, and as each was answered a bolt slid back. Seven questions were asked and seven answers rightly given. The great doors swung apart and Hermaintar passed through, entering the courtyard of Achaemenid. Within the courtyard Hermaintar fought and overcame the four great beast beings which feast on the bodies of men, but the sword of Hermaintar laid them low. He passed through the hall of contest where good and evil spirits fight an eternal battle for the souls of men, coming into the chamber of death. Now weary he sat himself down on the stone called the seat of Makalam, for it was then in this place, and he waited. Then Achaemenid the Terrible came and Hermaintar strove with him for half a day and prevailed, and so he entered into the place where stood the door of the spheres. This, Hermaintar opened with the great key, he passed through and entered the abode of the dead. He held fast to the great key, for without it there was no return, nor could it be held by his own powers alone, but only through the additional powers of those who might come to his aid. A mist gathered before him, gradually thickening, and as it thickened it gave off an ever-increasing brilliant light, at the same time shaping itself into a glorious form of brightness. When the shaping was complete a being stood there, radiant as the sunlight and lovely as the moonbeam. Hermaintar heard a voice coming out from the glorious being which said, "Who are you that comes hither, wan of cheek and with lowered countenance, heavy-hearted and dejected in spirit, weary from a strange fray? There is lamentation in your heart and surely none such as you has entered here before times. Brave indeed is the one who seeks entry by force of arms." Hermaintar answered, "O beautiful vision, indeed my heart is not light, for I have fought an inhuman contest. I have been assailed by hideous things unknown on earth, things which haunt the night dreams of men and are spoken of only in whispers. I have come seeking a friend, a companion of the hunt, the loyal one of my wanderings. His death lies heavily upon my heart, therefore I have dared to come even unto this place." The form of beauty said, "He whom you seek lies beyond the waters of death, but you who have passed the guardians are permitted to go thence. One thing, however, you must not do. In the midst of the waters grows the plant of eternity, the forbidden tree of which you and all men may not eat, a fruit of which was stolen by the serpent of ancient times. Partake of it now and you will suffer everlasting changelessness, the most dreadful of all fates. Go, tarry a while, then return this way." Hermaintar passed over the still sullen waters to the land of waiting where all spirits shine redly. He passed through the great doorway and came to the place of glory, the land of eternal living. He saw his friend, his companion of the hunt, the loyal one during his wanderings. Behold, there before his eyes was Yadal. Hermaintar knew him though he stood forth in a form more glorious than can be described to the understanding of men. He was here, life was in him, he was here in a bright and flowering place, a place of trees and waters, a place such as no man can describe. Yadal spoke with Hermaintar, and he spoke of things long forgotten by men and revealed truths unknown since the days when men walked with their father. They spoke one with the other, they rested in pleasant places, they embraced and they parted. Before Hermaintar left, Yadal said, "As you have passed through the portal of death while yet uncalled from the embrace of the flesh, for no purpose other than gaining assurance that the dead do not pass into dust, it is decreed by the ordinance of this place that your life shall be shortened. Time enough you will have, therefore record the things of which we have spoken, that they may be guiding lights to men. Set them down in two books, one recording the sacred secrets, more precious than life itself and for the elect alone. The other recording the sacred mysteries for those who sit at the feet of the elect. One will be the book of truth unveiled and the other the book of veiled truth, the book of hidden things." Yadal continued, "Once men could pass easily from one sphere to another, then came the misty veil. Now men must pass a grim portal to span the spheres and, as the generations pass, this, too, will be closed to men. The secret of the substances which, compounded together, become the horse which can bear men here, will remain with those who know the mysteries, but these will become even harder to reach. As the ages roll by, there will be many false mysteries and perhaps the path will become closed or the way lost." These things Yadal said, and they talked of other things. Hermaintar returned. He passed over the waters of death, he was upheld by the guardians of form, by those who safeguarded the powers of the Great Key. He saluted the glorious being, he passed through the manifold chambers, through the courtyard and the many bolted doors, down the winding path lit by strange torches, through the cavern and out through the cave. At the entrance Formana still waited, he arose from his watch and greeted Hermaintar warmly, saying, "I saw you as one dead, lying stiff between the twin flames, and I feared for you. Now, behold, you come forth with shining countenance as one in whom life has been renewed. My heart rejoices for you, but let us not delay, let us depart from this dread place, for I have spent the whole long vigil in fear and shrouded watchfulness." They departed the mountain, they passed through the forest. They fought with things that lurked in the gloom beneath the tall overhanging trees. They came through the gate of many cubits and back to the pleasant pastures of Formana. Chapter 9. Asarua. Ankiti had been left with the daughters of Formana who, having just reached maidenhood, were willful and vexed him sorely, so that he sought places of solitude, being an unbearded youth unlearned in such matters. Beyond the place where they dwelt there was a river, and from the hillside, away from the forest, a small stream flowed down to join it. Upward of the stream was a valley in which lay a small lake fed by an unfailing stream of sweet water. Here, in a house of wattle, dwelt a maiden whose name was Asarua, and she lived with her mother, Mamuaha, who was a wise woman and blind. The young woman had barely reached maidenhood and neither hunted for food nor dug in the ground. She dwelt in a garden of trees, her implements of toil being pruning hook and knife. Her days were spent in joyful tasks and a song was ever on her lips. She worked happily among the trees, loosening the soil about their roots, cutting away the overgrowth and pulling up the weeds. She knew the art of fostering twigs so that fruits grew on trees strange to them. She grew vines, the fruits of which were not used for wine, and these she twined around bowers and over the branches of trees. The women dwelt under the protection of Asarua's father, but the mother of Asarua was not of his household, for he was a strange king though a mighty one. The place wherein they dwelt was fenced about and guarded by seven fierce hounds, tawny-coated and long of body. The maiden was supple and firm-breasted, she was tall and graceful, red of cheek and light of skin. Her sole garment was plainly woven and unadorned, for she lacked all the things with which women bedeck themselves. Upon her head she wore a garland of leaves and her only ornaments were flowers. She was shy and restrained of glance, nevertheless, she was not unobserved, for the eyes of men had fallen upon her from outside the place wherein she dwelt. They did not enter the place, for to them it was sacred ground upon which men feared to trespass. One day, a hunter passed by and became smitten by her beauty and modesty. He thought also of what she had to offer, Fine fruits and green growing herbs, a garden of plenty where, in her embrace, he could find rest from the rigors of the hunt. He came to pay his court, garbed as for the chase with bow on back and spear in hand. He brought with him two wild geese and a young piglet to lay at her feet, but when his steps brought him within the fence the hounds were loosed upon him. The hunter, seeing that he was unwelcome, took counsel with himself and thought, "Perhaps if I am uncouth in her sight, my brother the shepherd, will seem better in her eyes." Therefore, the shepherd came and sat on the grass outside the fence, paying his court with music from the pipes, but she paid no heed to him. Still he remained, until wearying of his piping she called out, "Go, for what want I with one who sits blowing wind all day? Go learn music from the flowing waters." In the days that followed others came, among them a merchant, a rich man, a lord of grain fields and vineyards. Word of her beauty had been brought to him and he was challenged by her inaccessibility. So he thought, "If indeed it is as men say, then I will have this woman for my own. Have I not riches enough to provide all that gladdens the heart of a woman?" So he came wearing a mantle of scarlet with brooches of bronze. He wore buckles of silver and ornaments of cornelian and gold. He was a man possessed of a smooth, well-oiled tongue, the owner of a storehouse of fine words. He came with attendants who drove off another who sat outside the fence. The merchant came boldly through the gate of the fence, but Asarua met him. When he paid court with bejeweled words she said, "What have you to offer but gold and treasure? Think you that such unfeeling things can capture my heart? Am I to be bought as a woman bound within her father's household? Am I to be another counted among the many women you have known? An occupant of a corner place within your heart, O man of many lovers." Then he was wrath with her, but she took no heed and the hounds drove him off, even the lordly one, for the ground here was sacred. One day, not much later, the young Ankiti came that way and in passing he saw the maiden Asarua, but because of Bis' unfamiliarity with women he hesitated to speak, though he, too, was smitten by her beauty and maidenly bearing. Passing that way again Ankiti stopped by the place and seeing an old woman seated beneath the tree he said to her, "Mother, may I have some water, for I am thirsty from journeying." The woman replied, "My son, there is water in plenty below on the other side of this place, which young ears should hear, but I am blind and cannot see. I, too, thirst and therefore I beg that you enter and bring me cool water from the pool below the waterfall." So Ankiti entered and drank, and he gave water to the woman. Though Asarua espied him from afar she did not come near, but neither were the hounds allowed near him. Hermaintar had returned from his strange journey, but was puzzled when he saw Ankiti was silent and spoke little, that his thoughts were not inside him. So Hermaintar questioned him, "Wherefore are you sick? What ails you?" Then, when Ankiti spoke to him of the maiden he had seen, Hermaintar said, "This is a delicate matter and one not for the heavy tactics of men. Does not the fawn take flight at the sight of the hunting hound? While the moonflower that closes its petals at the touch of a man opens them at the touch of a woman. Your heart has guided you rightly when counseling caution, for you are ill-equipped to catch this rare bird of beauty when unaided by wisdom. For a woman's errand let us send a woman, the nightingale sings in the presence of the owl but hides in silence when the hawk roosts nearby." Then Hermaintar spoke with the maidservant of she who had mothered the daughters of Formana, and the maidservant agreed to do the things he told her. Thus, on the morrow she went forth unaccompanied, and coming to the place where Asarua dwelt sat down outside the gate. When the eyes of the maiden eventually fell upon her Asarua saw the bent old woman, weary and travel-stained from the journey, and out of kindness, for she was gentle and compassionate by nature, brought the old woman in, that she might sit under the shade of a tree to rest herself and eat some fruit. After the maidservant had rested in the shade and refreshed herself, she spoke to Asarua and said, "How lovely is your garden, how well watered, how bright and refreshing its many fruits. I have heard much of this place but more of you and your beauty, but no words of men have done justice to what I see with my own eyes." Asarua said, The words of men often differ from the thoughts of their hearts, while flattering words are bait above a well-set trap. Let us not talk of men and their wiles but of more pleasant things. Come, let us walk around the garden. They walked and came to a place where grew a tamarisk tree, and about the tamarisk entwined a vine holding many bunches of grapes. The old maidservant said, "Behold this tree, of what value would it be were it not for the vine? Would it have any value except as firewood? And what of the tree to which it clings, would it not straggle along the ground, laying in the dust to be crushed underfoot by any passerby? It would be a helpless thing unable to raise itself up, a barren creeper bearing no fruit. So see what benefit comes from their union and learn wisdom. Is not the tree named as a man is named and the vine as a woman is named? We who are old see lessons in such things and in learning from them gain wisdom. The young are ever loath to even read to their benefit from the book which is always open before their eyes." Asaru listened but said little, and as they walked the maidservant spoke of the young daughters of Fonana whom she had nursed, and of the ways of man and woman. She spoke as such women speak, her tongue following a winding road. The speech of men comes out like an arrow, but the speech of women comes out like a puff of smoke. Men talk with the naked tongue, but words from the mouth of a woman are veiled and devious. The tongue of a woman is a sword sheathed in silk. Not for naught are women called the twin-tongued. Perchance these words were added in the days of Thelos, for not all men think thus of women. The maidservant had an inexhaustible supply of words, and Asarua was so taken aback to hear the things of which she spoke that she could find no words to answer. Thus speaking, they came to the small dwelling place where the mother of Asarua was preparing a meal. She invited the maidservant to eat with them and to sleep there that night, and this the maidservant gladly accepted. After they had eaten, the maidservant spoke with Mamua, the mother of Asarua, and the talk was of unfortunate women whose daughters were fair yet refused to be married, daughters who closed their ears even to good advice on marriage, whether such women were true women or unnatural women. The words which mattered were few while the words in which they were buried were many, but the former were not lost on Mamua whose ears were not closed to such talk and they entered her heart. She gave attentive ears when the other spoke of Ankiti who, though but a youth, was wise. Though he had not yet drunk deeply from the waters of wisdom, nevertheless the well from which he drew them was a never-failing one. "Be wise," said the maidservant, "choose this young man, for surely none better will come this way. He does not wander from his place of duty, he is not slothful in manner, nor does he spend his days in futile pleasures. He does not go from woman to woman, and while it is true that this could be because of his age, yet he speaks of women only with respect, which is not the way with budding fornicators. He is manly, he is of the blood of kings and above all he is wise, because he has a wise instructor. He is a youth of good promise and one who would not bestow his love lightly." The mother of Asarua heard the words of the maidservant with both ears and when the maidservant was departing said, "Come again when the moon is new, that we may speak more of these matters." Ankiti visited the place again and when the maidservant returned at the new moon Mamua said, "It is well, my daughter will marry the youth Ankiti. But first he must bide in the place where he now serves for 1 year, then he must labor in this place for 1 year, after this he may marry Asarua with my blessing." This seemed good in the eyes of Ankiti and so it was that he labored 2 years in order to marry Asarua. Chapter 10. The Death of Hermaintar. In the days when the Elshumban were gathered in war hosts, Hermaintar departed with his household and the household of Ankiti to dwell in the land between the great river of sweet waters and the bitter waters of the west, and they built an encampment there. They were in a land where some men spoke as Hermaintar spoke, and though there were men of blood with them, the people of the land let Hermaintar and those with him dwell in peace among them, because in those days men were inflicted with Inahina. When the task set upon him was nigh finished, Hermaintar knew that his days in the land of the living were not to be many more, therefore he betook himself into a place of solitude. There he fasted for many days, casting his spirit that it might commune with the Father of the gods, but the voice of God remained silent. Then he left that place, going into a cave where he dwelt in the half-light for many days, but again there was no response from the Father of the gods. So Hermantar departed from the cave and returned to his people, where he was heard to say, "Woe, for truly my God has forsaken me and remains dumb against my pleadings. Yet I have done all the things told me before times and written in the great book, wherefore have I failed?" Then he went apart from the people and slept alone, for his heart was heavy. But behold, in the night he had a dream. In it he saw the sacred symbols spread out upon a cloth of white linen, and each was displayed according to its form. As he gazed upon them and numbered them, each by its own number, an ass came and ate up the sacred symbols, and lo, the ass became a falcon. Then as he looked, the falcon became a cow, and between its horns was a crown of silver and a crown of gold, and the cow spoke to Hermantar, saying, "Drink of my milk and anoint your eyes with it, thus they will be opened and you will see." Hermantar drank the milk and anointed his eyes, and then he awoke. Remembering the dream and being wise, he needed no other to interpret it for him. So then he straightway did the things which had to be done, about which those with understanding will know, and departed from the people. Hermantar went out towards a place of solitude, about 1 day's journey distant. Having gone about half the way, he became weary under the noonday sun, and so sat down beneath a tree to rest in its shade. Then, as he drowsed, behold, a great flash of light came down from out of heaven, and it smote the ground before him. He heard a great noise like a mighty whip crack, and he was blinded. Then he heard a voice saying, "Behold, I am here, the God of gods and the God of men in the beginning." Hearing this, Hermantar fell upon his face and cried, "O Great One, I am your servant." Then God said, "Wherefore would you open a door unto me? Because the race of man has been defiled and men are no longer with me, am I not the withdrawn one, the hidden one?" Hermantar, still on the ground, answered, "O Father of the gods, I your servant would know your will. I have a task nigh finished and seek to know whether it is well in your sight, or whether it is a thing done without your blessing." God answered Hermantar, saying, "Is this not a sacred thing, a heritage saved and handed down from the days when men walked with me? Therefore, it is a good thing, though care must be taken to ensure it is not disclosed to the eyes of profane men. The concoctions which, when properly compounded, will enable men to span the spheres can also, used otherwise, give men near unlimited potency and extreme pleasure with womankind. Therefore, such things must be carefully safeguarded, for in the hands of lesser men they will certainly be abused. But let it all be as it is written, do with it as you have been instructed. You call upon me as the Father of the gods, nor do you err in this. Yet I am the hidden God, the God of secret manifestation, the wronged God, the betrayed God, the disappointed God. I am the God who sought to give love divine to men by making them my heirs, making them partakers of divinity, co-creators with me. But men spurn their birthright, not through wickedness alone but through their weakness and love of pleasure. Therefore, the love once offered cannot now be displayed in all its glory, it cannot be revealed in its beauty, it must now be leavened with severity and chastisement. This, so that those who are the inheritors of divinity may return to it with undiminished powers, but purged of their weaknesses and love of unprofitable pleasure. This you should know, that men may know, divinity of itself is not a created thing and cannot be bestowed as a gift. It comes as the crown of achievement. I, the Almighty God who, by taking thought can create 10,000 worlds, say this. Men have said, as they will say throughout the ages, why, if God be Almighty, can He not create perfection immediately? Why does He not create beings having the knowledge of divine love forthwith? Why have earth with all its trials and tribulations? Know this, what appears to you as ages in time is, to me, but a flash of thought in a moment of eternity. I breathed in, the hosts of earths and the spheres were not. I breathed out and the hosts of earths and spheres were. I breathe in and they are no more. All things exist within the Eternal One, and that which men know as the span of time is the act of creation. Mark the flight of an arrow from the hands of a bowman. It flies from the bent bow, time passes, then it finds its mark. But to me the arrow leaves the bow, and strikes the mark together. Distance, time, and change are not with me. Once I, your God, was not apart from man, my offspring. Now I am veiled from his sight, not because I have willed it so, but because man has chosen to bring this about. The barrier between us grows ever more dense, as man wantonly spurns his birthright. Henceforth, it may be penetrated only by long and arduous preparations, and even then those who would do so must know the key. I come to you, not because of your preparations, but because your God is ever ready to incline towards men. Though there is this barrier between us, it is not impervious to the sincere prayers of a pure heart. This, men should know. As for you, your days are numbered, you are now no more than the basket holding the seeds which will be strewn and sown by another hand. Many things of which I have spoken are not for the ears of men, for such knowledge, freely bestowed, would not benefit them. Other things are beyond their present understanding. Let these, therefore, be recorded unto the generations of men yet unborn. Men are now as children and must learn again as children, being taught childish tales. Therefore, go hence, go to Ankiti and tell him of these things. Say also that his God, I who am, chooses him as the sower of seeds. Let him know that I who am will guide his steps and will open a door in the barrier, that he may hear my voice. Let your eyes now see again and, behold, I am who I am. Then Hermaintar left the place where he had seen the face of the Father of Gods, returning to the encampment of his people which had been set up in the midst of pasture land. When he drew nigh, he saw cattle lying beside the running waters and men were moving among them. The cattle were dead and their bellies swollen. Men came up to Hermaintar and cried, "Behold, the sustenance of our children is taken from their mouths. The cattle have eaten a herb that burns as fire in their bellies, so they crave water, drinking until they become overfilled and their bellies burst from within, therefore they die. Who is this whom you call Father of the Gods? Perchance the gods do have a father, but where is the God who protects men? Where is the God who is the father of men? While you leave us to pay homage to the Exalted One, who may concern himself with the affairs of the gods but has no concern for the welfare of men, our cattle die. Because of your words we have neglected to build an altar to Shemakin or to pay homage to Yahana. Truly we are men who have been deceived and led astray. We are men who have walked with their eyes turned upward and fallen into a quicksand. Tell us then, O wise one, who are the gods of men and of cattle?" This filled the heart of Hermaintar with ire and he cried out to the wrathful people, "Wherefore do you cry out to me and seek some god to come to your aid? There is but one god and these that you call gods are but manifestations of his members. Why do you seek to cast blame on God for your own neglect? Has he not relinquished his hold on all creatures that serve man and given them into your hands? Behold the beasts of the forest and wilderness, do they eat of the herb that poisons? Are they not able to know the herb that is harmful and the herb that nourishes? The herb that heals in sickness and the herb that brings death? Who taught them this wisdom? There are creatures under the care of God which know not the slothful care of man, therefore they are safe from the deadly herb and pass it by. But you, having taken these poor beasts to benefit from them, are solely responsible for their well-being. They are your responsibility. The Father of the Gods made cattle as he made all creatures, and while he ruled their ways they were protected from the deadly herbs. Then men took them unto themselves so they might serve them. They yielded milk and cheese to nourish them and firm meat to sustain them, their hides covered them warmly as they slept. These things the cattle gave, not unto God but unto man. Therefore, who should protect and care for them, he who benefits or he who does not? Do you expect God to herd your cattle? To keep them from the deadly herb while you slumber in the shade? Is this not a just reward for your slothfulness? You know that the herb is deadly, but these cattle, the dumb servants of man, know it not, for they are delivered into your care. Would you take all they give while denying them the diligence of your protection? What kind of men are you who cry, "Woe unto us whom God has forsaken"? Who wring their hands, saying, "What God shall we seek to aid us in our self-wrought calamity?" Arise like men, to shoulder the burden of your own slothfulness and lack of diligence. Never fear that God will fail man, for if man does the duties of man, God will do the duties of God, for it is man who falls short. It is man who seeks to take more than he gives. Surely whatever man takes for his benefit, also becomes his responsibility. God decrees that man may take whatever he will for his own use, but in so doing he must also assume responsibility for its care and rightful use. Is this unjust? The men said no more. Hermaintar then made the men draw the cattle up out of the water, and some which had eaten of the deadly herb were saved. He then divided the pastures and sent men to seek out the places of the deadly herb and cut it from the soil. One day, Hermaintar was going about the encampment and he came upon a man burying his newly born daughter, and Hermaintar was wrathful at the man for such a deed. It was an abomination performed by the sand wanderers and the wild men who dwelt in the wilderness. Taking the child, Hermaintar brought it to the wife of Ankiti, who saved it so it lived. It was named Maha, meaning pure of heart, but because of the sand which had filled her eyes she was blind. The strangers about the encampment became enraged against Hermaintar because of what he had done. Also, because he had struck the father of the child so he bled, they demanded that the blood be requited. They said, "This is an unjust deed, for he who buries a daughter because he lacks sustenance for her does no wrong in our eyes. Is it not better that she be buried in the ground out of sight than kept with disgrace? Is it not for the father to decide whether a daughter should live? Has a woman a soul of her own? Is she not no more than the maker of the body, while the soul is given into her keeping by man?" The strangers about the encampment were not so many, while those with Hermaintar were many and strong, but he dealt justly with those claiming payment for the blood. They were given a piece of silver and a calf that was ready for the slaughter. Thus Maha came into the household of Ankiti. Hermaintar was sitting with Ankiti and said to him, "I have spoken to you of the happening while I sat beneath a tree in a place of solitude, and of matters which you should know in order to be wise. Into your keeping have been given the treasures I have wrought by my own hands, and you are well instructed in the sacred things and the mysteries. You have a destiny upon you which may not be fulfilled in this place, while the sustenance obtainable here declines day by day. Therefore, let us depart and go a long journey by way of the bitter waters, for should we go by way of the forest or through the great wilderness, we may not live. Our flocks and herds can be driven before us, for the road is wide and well watered. Let us not delay in this place, for already there is a restlessness among the people here." So they departed from that place, journeying towards the bitter waters, and when they came there they turned southward, continuing until they came to Basur. There they encamped, for the death sickness had come upon Hermaintar. As he lay upon a couch of sheepskins he called for Ankiti, but he did not come, for he had gone before them to spy out the land. However, Ankiti did come before Hermaintar passed from earth, and Hermaintar knew he was there and called him to his side. Then Hermaintar said, "My hour is at hand, but I am without fear, knowing I go not to a place where men eat dust, where all is darkness and gloom. The fears of my youth are but shadows having no substance, they flee before the pure light of truth. Upon you there is a great destiny, may you reach out and grasp that which your heart desires, and having attained it use it to deliver all men from the darkness of ignorance. Go forth like the sun who throws his rays down like a net over the land to enlighten it. Go to a land where the honest man will be made rich and the dishonest man impoverished, for the balances must be adjusted so that riches cease to be the reward of dishonesty and deceit. Go to a land where those holding places of power and position will stand forth as examples of goodness and honesty, where none but the worthy occupy high positions, where those who have possessions and estate use these to succour the needy and resist the strength of those who oppress the weak and unprotected." Ankiti said, "But where is this land and how shall I find it?" Hermaintar answered, "Were there such a place, what good purpose would you serve by going there? What you will have to do would have been done already by another." Hermaintar died and was buried deep within the ground and none knows his tomb. May he live forever and dwell with the father of the gods whom he served. These things concerning Hermantar have been rewritten many times, but the copies have always been true. That which follows has been added on, but when made and by whom it is impossible to discover. Hermantar is buried in the land of Philistia. Is this Okichia? The father of Hermantar was Nimrod of the Twin Bows. This, I doubt, and it is not stated. The stone of Machalim is at Bethgal even now. The words on the tomb of Yadal are, he died because he was not as other men. I, Phrastonus, have seen it. Could this be when 80 generations have passed? Men of this race are unsound witnesses. The Samarites say Yadal was not mortal man. This we know in truth, the deeds of Hermantar and Yadal are more fully told in the tales of the Hittites. The shield of Ankiti was called the Big Shaker, and painted upon it was a likeness of the mud-hopping bird. It was this bird that taught men writing, for it left mud marks which men first read as omens, later forming them into signs which could be read. They are not as ours, though men among us can read them. Ankiti taught the mystery of metals in Okichia, a land of beer, bread, and milk. He was renowned in the twin lands of light. Maha, the blind one who remained virgin, guided Ankiti to this land while yet a child. She was filled with the inner light of wisdom and saw with the spirit. When he knew not which way to go, her father sat her on the ground and held a breast feather before her, upon which she blew. He went whichever way it inclined and was never led astray. Later she used this method when settling disputes and giving judgments. She was greatly honored, for in the whole land there was no wiser woman. We who make these writings indestructible have abandoned the book of Ankiti, for it has not of value to those who follow us, and this is a work of much labor. It contains laws for a people living in a land called Okichia who must have been less than barbarians, for he forbade such things as the eating of children newly born, the mixing and drying of their blood for eating in uniting brothers, and the hanging up of women in travail. Also the cutting of a woman's private parts and the deballing of men. Chapter 11. The Teachings of Yusura. These are the words for the sons of the true doctrine, written in the Temple of Sacred Mysteries at Yankeb in the days of darkness, by the unnamed Lord of the Secret Belief, who then lived. The true knowledge of the teachings and mysteries of Yusura concerning the spirit within the body, taken from his books and rewritten truly after the custom of writing. Yusura spoke to his sons in this manner. I am the vice-regent of the God of Gods. I am the custodian of the books of power. I am the voice of heaven. I am one sent into Tamarua as a light-bearer, that a call may go thence throughout all lands. Let every man be watchful of his deeds and ways. Whosoever be watchful of himself is a man of wisdom, for he shall be saved from the terror of everlasting darkness. I am the torch-bearer running before the chair-litter of truth. I come to reveal the greatness of men, to tell them of their immortal selves, of their spirits which have to be ransomed from the doom of devouring darkness. The God of Gods spoke unto me, saying, Long have you dwelt under my shadow and listened to my words. Now arise and go hence to a land where these things of which we have spoken can be established. To a place whither I shall lead you, for it is not proper that those who dwell there should remain uninstructed. Behold, I have given you the secret of immortality, but know that though all men are born into a heritage of immortality, not all enjoy it. The God of Gods, in his infinite mercy, plunges many into the waters of forgetfulness. Yet even from there they may return to be renewed, not of themselves but through the supplications of others. When Yusura came into Tamarua, he gathered his sons together on the stones beneath the place called Hamtree and spoke to them in this manner. I am the dawnlighter and a torchbearer for the God of Gods. These are my words which you will do well to absorb, as the dry sand soaks up water. Though they are words of wisdom, they are useless unless accepted by men who have control over themselves. They have no value to men who are unable to feel compassion for others or who close their ears to truth. You are the few chosen ones, my sons, light of my light, who shall hand the light on down through the generations. To you I give the true conception of God. To you I give the standard, that it may be a rallying point for those who will accompany us, For we stand on the borders of a land which has found favor in the eyes of our God. With us are fighting men, but they are few, while those who stand ready to repel us are many. Therefore, we will not set ourselves against them in battle array, but go among them with guile, to gather many who will fight with us. You shall be the light of the fighting men, even as I am your HGHT and the God of gods my light. The light that is with me was kindled at the supreme source, which is the God of gods. Therefore, my HGHT shines with such brilliance that it must be veiled in part, lest it blind you. It is even as the sun be seen through a veil of cloud, it may be gazed upon for as long as desired. Seen thus, it is a thing of beauty and mystery, not something which bums and consumes the eyes of the beholder. Therefore, even as I veil my light from you, so shall you veil your lights from the eyes of the uninstructed. Yet in all matters not pertaining to the light you shall instruct them in the fullness of truth. In all matters concerning their bodies you shall instruct them in truth. But in all matters concerning the Lord of the body you shall instruct them with the light that is veiled. Behold the nature of man. Within him is a spark from the divine source, and this is the Lord of the body. This alone is everlasting, this alone of man is his true self. This spark is enwrapped within a heavy mantle of matter, it is enclosed in a covering of earthly clay. This spark alone is the seed of life, it alone has understanding and thought. Such things are not with the clay of the flesh, neither are they kin to the stones from which the bones come. The life within man radiates out from the enclosed spark, and through the blood endows the body with life and heat. Life gives forth heat, and the greater the life, the greater the heat. As the sun gives light and fire spreads heat, as the flower radiates perfume, so does the central light give forth a vaporous unseeable glow, and this our fathers called the breath of God. This breath comes forth in two manifestations, there is a heavy form and a HGHT form, and from these all things are compounded. From the one comes the sacred glow in its two aspects, which men call the breath of God, and from this are made all things which are in heaven and earth. Above is the God of gods, and below him are heaven and earth. Heaven is divided in twain, there is a place of light and a place of darkness. Within the place of light dwell the spirits of good, and within the place of darkness dwell the spirits of evil. Between them the boundary is not fixed but flows back and forth according to their fluctuating strengths. But they who abide in the HGHT shall always prevail, for light will ever dispel darkness. Therefore, those who dwell in darkness withdraw before the brilliance of those who dwell in the light. This light and darkness are not such as men can understand, for it is not the light and darkness known on earth. Before the gates of heaven is the land of the horizon, whence go all who depart from their earthly body. From here there are two great gates, one leads to the place of light and the other to the place of darkness, and the Lord of the body is admitted into its appointed place according to its likeness. He who is filled with the light and is a brilliant one cannot go to the place of darkness, for it would draw back before him. Neither can he who is a dark one go into the place of light, for there he would shrivel before the light, as the white worm coming forth from the damp darkness of its hole shrivels in the light of the sun. Between heaven and earth there is a great gulf across which the dwellers in heaven may not return, but earth is not wholly beyond their reach. Man receives, from the place of light, that which influences him for good, and from the place of darkness that which affects him for evil. These things may be written, but the secret things concerning them may not be recorded in such manner that they come to the knowledge of the unenlightened men. That which comes from heaven, whether influencing for good or evil, comes forth as shades in the likeness of men, which is rare, or much more often as lukim, which are like unto motes. It may also come as waves of air, but not air such as we breathe and feel. It is something altogether different in nature. Things come forth which are not stable, and these are the formless ones. All things are held in form by the breath of God, which changes formlessness, but the formless ones can alter form into instability. There are three great spheres, and that containing the earth is held together by the great glow outflowing from the God of gods. That part of the great glow which is light and contains life is called manna, while that which is heavy and contains the flesh of things of the earth is called menu. The one who is the God of gods is so great that he cannot be defined in the speech of men. Neither can they conceive him in their thoughts, for he is beyond their understanding. Mortal man has limitations, therefore let men conceive him as they will. It is of no importance, providing their conception serves both his purpose and the glorification of man. Man is not yet great, and until he becomes so, it is well that he worship the many God forms conceived within his thoughts, providing they be such as tend to raise him above himself. Nor do ritual and worship do harm of themselves, unless they, too, thickly overlay the truth so it is buried from sight. Ritual and outward forms of worship can be aids to purification of thought and provide a kind of sustenance for the Lord of the body. What are the lesser gods beloved by unawakened men but thought-conceived friends and guides? Yet this is a dangerous path men tread, balanced between light and darkness. Therefore, when man wanders towards the abyss of darkness, reveal a little more light, that he may see and so return to the path. Beware, too, lest he follow gods that are false guides and would lure him into the quicksand of carnality, or into the wilderness of ignorance. Before crossing into Tamura, Yusura chose captains to be over the fighting men, and they sent forth men to spy out the land. He also sent some from among his sons into the land of Tuwar, that they might talk with the people there, and these came back bringing hostages from the governors of the land of Tuwar. Then Yusura spoke with the sons of the governors and they gave ear to his words, they were receptive to his speech. Yusura spoke to the people. These are the words of the God of the gods. Henceforth, no child shall be sold into bondage by its father or by any man who has ward over it. Such may not yet be the custom of all the people in this land, but if they become mighty, this they may do, for such is the nature of men. If a man have a woman in bondage, he shall not cause her to become a harlot unto men, for this is a great wickedness and he shall not go unpunished. If she become with child unto her master, then neither she nor the child shall be given in bondage to another. But if she be given to a freeman who takes her in marriage, then it will be well. The greatest wickedness in the eyes of the God of gods is all incest of the first degree, which is that between mother and son or father and daughter, or between the mother's mother and the son of the mother, or between the mother's father and the daughter of the mother, or between the father's father and the father's daughter, or between the father's mother and the father's son. This is a wickedness unto the God of gods, for it calls forth the strongest of the formless ones, causing it to enter into an earthly body to become an abomination before the eyes of God and man. Therefore, they who commit such an act shall perish by fire. If it be committed with a child, then the child shall not perish, but it shall be branded with the mark of incest. Adultery is a foul and evil thing which you shall abhor, for it permits the lukim to pollute the fountain of life. In a far-off land there lived a queen more beautiful than the dawnflower, who, because she was powerful, disregarded her heritage of womanhood. As powerful kings had many wives, she thought she could do likewise with men. The God of gods and creator of life created men and women intending that each should play a different role. They are in no wise alike, for as men have their function so do women have theirs. What is meet for one is not meet for the other, and because the creator made them as they are, each should follow their own path, never seeking to journey along the others. Now, while the seed of one man was yet with her, this queen took the seed of another, and the seed of one man strove with that of the other so that both perished and became a corrupt pasture. Thus, the way was cleared for Lukim to enter into the antechamber of life and the sacred shrine of life was polluted, becoming the breeding place of foulness. So it was that when other men came unto her, the flesh of their bodies was seized upon by the Lukim and corrupted, for foul Lukim had made their abode within the woman. So the wellspring of life became a fountain of polluting evil. Adultery is an abomination to the bestower of life, therefore let it not go unpunished. None shall sleep in the bed of another, unless the spell of his presence be first removed. For he who goes into any place or takes up anything while it is under the spell of another's presence, shall surely suffer. They who are of the same kin living under the one roof, will not suffer unless sickness already be there. None shall eat from the platter of another or drink from his drinking vessel until the spell of his presence has been removed. None among those who know the God of gods shall walk in anything poured out for a libation unto strange gods, neither shall he touch any part of the libation. If it come upon him, he shall go forthwith to the Master of Mysteries and be cleansed. Yosiris said unto the people, these are the words of the God of gods. None among you shall wash himself in water used by another and contained within anything made by the hand of man. None among those who know God shall touch a woman while the days of her heritage are upon her. No man shall go unto a woman with unwashed hands, and when man and woman have lain together, both shall purify themselves before going about their tasks. Among the Lukim none is more subtle than the Nabal, which seek sustenance among the food of men. Therefore, if you have bread within your dwelling, then it shall not be hung up, but if there be meat or fish, then it shall be suspended within the dwelling. If you have bran or meal which has been pounded, then it shall be kept in a capped container with nourita flowers, thus the Lukim will not come upon it. Neither crushed corn nor the crumbs of any repast shall be left within the sight of man or within the boundaries of the dwelling, lest the Nabal seize upon them for sustenance. All things that have held life but have not been used for food shall be buried within the ground. All vessels which have held food but hold it no longer shall be made clean with sun and sand. When the flesh of any beast or of fish or fowl becomes dark in your keeping or has the smell of rottenness upon it, then it is a sign that the Nabal have come upon it, and it shall be taken out and buried where no beast can come upon it. Thus, the Nabal are left without sustenance and will be forced back into their dark abode. But if you permit them to sustain themselves, then they will come in their hosts and, being fattened and strengthened, will afflict you with many terrors during night watches. If the pouring place or the spout of any pitcher or pot have a blackness upon it, then that pitcher or pot shall be broken, for it has been entered by the fiery Lukim. If any who know God eat with strangers, they shall purify themselves at the rising of the sun on the following day. If any among you eat with a hand uncleansed by water or sand, then be prepared for attack by the Lukim of the night. He who draws the blood of any beast must cleanse himself of all blood, lest he be attacked by the dark Lukim. Neither food nor drink of any kind shall be kept under a bed or against a sleeping place, lest the Lukim of the night come and take up their abode therein. These are words of the God of gods spoken through the mouth of Yosira. Yosira said this also. All things which may sustain the Lukim are to be buried or burnt. Anything coming forth from the nostrils or mouth of any man or woman is rejected from within and becomes sustenance for the Lukim. Still waters that lie upon the ground are their drinking places and forbidden to men. Water shall not be used as drink unless it be drawn from within the ground, or be in a place where it is shaded by trees. Eat only food known to be wholesome and which gives contentment to the stomach. In taste it should be soothing and refreshing, never bringing pain and discomfort. Eat not of anything that is too dry or oversalted, or which brings sickness upon you. Any food of which men eat and has become rotten or moldy has been seized by the Lukim for sustenance, this you can see, for the rottenness and mold upon it is the excreta of Lukim. Anything that has blood in it and is dead, having died of itself, shall not be eaten, for the Lukim have made their abode in it. No man shall eat uncooked meat, even that which the Sanfaros carry shall not be eaten. The slaying of any man or any woman is forbidden, but it is not unlawful to slay in war or in self-defense, or to uphold the purity of the household and home. To kill deceitfully or to strike from behind is murder and shall not go unpunished. If blood be shed, it shall not cry out from the ground in vain, and unto the kinsmen of each one slain shall be the order of revenge. If you swear an oath one with another, saying, great God bear witness or before any strange God, to deceive another man, then consider, for only the most foolhardy turn their back on such an oath. For it is sworn on the life of the Lord of the body, and if it be broken the Lord of your body will be everlastingly disfigured with an unremovable scar. Man has many trials to overcome in his life, and not the least of these, tests is oath keeping. Though an oath may diminish and become nothing with the passing years according to the memories of men, it is everlastingly impressed on the Lord of the body. Wiser far is he who never makes an oath. If any man say, the whirlwind and the sandstorm, the flood waters and the burning fire, these do I fear because these I see, But the look him which I see not neither do I fear, that man is a fool, for he knows not the deficiencies of his own eyes. The look him, he will learn to know by their manifestations, for they will seize upon his body and torment it, sometimes even unto death. It is likewise with the God of gods, none may see him, but by his manifestations is he made known unto men. Yosera spoke to the captains of the fighting men and to those who were with them and said, When we come into this new land, all things that the people who dwell therein hold sacred you will neither defile nor mock. Neither shall you stir up strife with any man, for we come to them as friends, not foes. Therefore, when Yosera and all those with him came up into the land of Tuwar and dwelt there, peace was in the land. Then Yosera taught the people of Tuwar the weaving of cloth and the working of metals, and showed them how to make tools and weapons of metal cast in a mysterious manner. But the secret of the sharp-edged weapons he revealed only to his own. The people of Tuwar built a habitation for Yosera and a temple of brick bound with reeds. There were skins upon the walls and on the floor, and the door were of wood. Then Yosera spoke to his sons in this manner. These are the things in which the people of this place shall be instructed. The dove is the most sacred of birds and shall not be eaten, but if people say, Forbid it not to us for sacrifice to our gods, then it shall not be forbidden them. The milk of all beasts which do not have horns and part the hoof is not for the sustenance of man, but if the people say, Forbid it not, for it is our custom, then it shall not be forbidden them. The sacrifice of breast children at the burial of the dead shall be forbidden, for the blood of the young cannot provide life for the old, each man being the fashioner of his own destiny. He that has life shall bear it with him, and none can possess the body and life of a breast child except the God who gave it life. He who buries a living breast child with the dead shall himself die. All things buried with the departed one, whether they be weapons or dishes, instruments or ornaments, shall have the form released from them before they are placed within the ground. This shall be the law unto all those who work with metal, whether it be gold, silver, or copper. One day in seven shall be a day of rest for the fires here with the metals are wrought. On this day no fire will be lit and no metal touched or moved from its place. On the even of this day all things of metal that have been made since the last day of rest shall be placed in a trough of sanctified oil, remaining there until their appointed time. Nothing shall go out from the workplace of a craftsman in metal until it has passed through the oil.